Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
I have six money personalities that I like to teach people about.
Amanda Christensen is with Utah State University.
And these are security, so money helps you feel safe and secure. Planning, money helps you act intentionally. Spontaneous, money helps you enjoy the moment. Status, money helps you make a good impression. Giving, money is used to help others. And then carefree, money is just not a priority. So those are the six. And everyone is a combination of all six. And overusing or underusing any one of these six can be challenging. So these money personalities can change over time, depending on circumstances, or if you intentionally decide to try to be more spontaneous, for example, that's certainly going to change. Most people have a couple money personalities that are dominant.
This is Agriculture Today.
My name is Ryan Lindsay. I'm the grandson of a dairy farmer, the grandson of a truck driver, and the son of a ditch digger who proudly still holds his CDL today.
Last week, the House Transportation Subcommittee on Highways holding a hearing on trucking policy.
Growing up in a family business in Texas, I saw firsthand the critical role that truckers and trucking plays in building our communities and building our infrastructure. Today, I serve as Executive Vice President of CRH. CRH is the largest building materials business in the world. Although you may not know who CRH is, you very well know us as APAC Mid-South in Alabama, Michigan Paving in Michigan, or Shelley Companies in Ohio. Our 50,000 employees across 48 states and 2,500 operating locations are integral parts of the communities that you represent. We have some challenges facing our supply chain. It is harder today than ever before to move goods. Congress has the ability to make meaningful changes that would have big impacts on the way goods are moved across the country. Now look, we all know these supply chain problems exist and want to work in lockstep with Congress to address this together. Our charge every day is to move goods from point A to point B in the safest, least disruptive, most efficient way possible. And to do that, we utilize ships, barges, rail, and most critically, we utilize trucks. In addition to the thousands of contract haulers we use on a daily basis, CRH owns and operates over 15,000 trucks internally. Nearly a third of those are operated by a skilled union workforce. I can tell you firsthand that the driver shortage is real. There is absolutely no question about it. Today, CRH alone needs to hire another 1,000 truck drivers just to maintain current demand, just to keep up. With this shortage, it is more critical than ever to ensure we have resiliency in the trucking pipeline. As Congress begins to work on the next highway bill, and we're really excited about that, by the way, there are policies that the Shippers Coalition is united behind that would not only improve our supply chain, but do so safely and without additional budgetary commitment. The Shippers Coalition represents more than 80 of our country's most prominent companies and trade associations in the manufacturing, food and beverage, and agribusiness industries. We are the ones who produce and provide goods and make sure you and your constituents can get them. We are also focused on improving the country's supply chains and increasing safety for everyone on the road. Congress should authorize a pilot program to modestly increase the gross vehicle weight limit on interstates from the current 80,000 pound limit up to 91,000 pounds while adding a sixth axle or the bridge formula, whichever is lower. Importantly, this proposal would be opt-in. It would also impose important conditions on participation, which would protect the public interest, including the addition of an extra axle, weight distribution requirements of the bridge formula, and per axle limits so that safety concerns are met. Today, many of our trucks are departing facilities with only three quarters full. With an increase in GVW, we would see these trucks fill closer to capacity, meaning fewer vehicles on the road, fewer trips to accomplish the same task, and ultimately fewer miles in the system. Now here's the bottom line. Just like we cannot build projects the same way we did 40 years ago, we can also not govern the trucking industry the same way. The GVW limit has not been updated in over 40 years, and now is the time to do so. CRH and the members of the Shippers Coalition strongly supports the committee's efforts to improve trucking-related policies and the safety of our communities.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
For March 1st, all hogs and pigs is at 74.5 million head, down 0.2% from previous year.
Updating the latest quarterly hogs and pigs report, Travis Averill with NAS.
Breeding hogs is at 5,980,000 head, a decrease of 0.6% from 2024. Market hogs are at 68.5 million head. That is down 0.2% from last year. As you can see, the top five states are listed in the bottom left-hand corner. Iowa leads the way at 24.3 million head. That is down 4% from previous year. Minnesota is number two at 9.2 million, up 1% from previous year. North Carolina is in third place, and they're up 9% from previous year at 8.1 million. Illinois and Indiana wrap up the top five states, and they're both down 1% at 5,550,000 for Illinois and 4,350,000 for Indiana. The bottom right-hand corner is a chart of the U.S. quarterly hogs and pigs inventory from 2016 to present. The March inventories are represented by the orange squares, and the previous quarter for December is that green diamond. Here is a map of the United States for March 1st, 2025, hogs and pigs inventory with comparisons to 2024. The top number is inventory as a unit of 1,000 head. The bottom number is the percent change from previous year's inventory. For the 14 states published here on the map, seven of them are in blue. Those are increasing from previous year. The darker the magnitude of the color, the larger the percent changes from previous year's inventory. So if we have 14, seven of them are increasing, the other seven are decreasing. Those are illustrated in red from previous year. Just two notes to take away from this map. As you can see, Minnesota and Pennsylvania both have a pound sign next to the inventory. Those are record highs for those states for the respective quarter of March. As I stated on the previous slide, market hogs at 68.5 million head. So let's look at the breakouts of the market hogs by weight groups. Less than 50 pounds is at 21.3 million head, down 0.3% from 2024. The 50 to 119 pound weight group is at 19 million, a decrease of 0.4% from previous year. The 120 to 179 pound weight group is at 15.7 million head, down 0.3% from last year. As you can see, the only group that has a slight increase, and that's 180 pounds and over, is at 12.5 million, up 0.5% from last year's inventory. Below the table is the quarterly distributions of weight groups since March of 2022. Next, we have the sows farrowed and also the intentions for the next two quarters. Sows farrowed for December 2024 to February 2025 is at 2,892,000 head. That is down 37,000 from previous year. Just note from the December hogs and pigs report, the second intentions for this quarter was at 2,930,000. And the first intentions back in the September hogs and pigs report was at 2,933,000. So second intentions from March to May of 2025 is at 2,913,000 head, down 0.2% from prior year's actual farrowings. Note in the December hogs and pigs report, the first intentions for March to May of 2025 was at 2,953,000 head. This quarter, the first intentions for June to August 2025 sows farrowing is at 2,961,000, down 24,000 head from previous year's actual farrowings. At the bottom is the U.S. quarterly sows farrow chart since 2016. Sows farrow for December to February are the green squares. The second intentions for March to May is the orange diamond, and the first intentions for June to August is the purple triangle on the chart here.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This chart here shows our top six markets for agricultural exports. They account for about two-thirds of our total exports.
Jason Hathmeister is with USDA.
The dramatic line there is China in red, where you could see the dramatic fall with the tariffs in 2018 and 19, and then the rebound, which basically got us back to our traditional growth path from WTO accession, and then the last couple of years. But so China's China in some ways exemplifies this topic, because when we lost the China market 2018 and 19, we were all scrambling to try and find alternatives. This is our top 20 agricultural export markets. I don't know if you can make them out. You see Mexico, Canada, and China. They're our top three. They're head and shoulders above the rest. And of course, China has now fallen to third. But Mexico and Canada are up there. So those three, they count for half of our exports. Once again, showing sort of a concentration, a little bit of exposure. And then you can see the top six, that's two-thirds of our exports, the top 10 and the top 20. So really two lessons for me out of this is one, like the need to be prepared if we lose one of these big markets because we can't easily replace them. And then second is that there is a lot of, this is a long tail, right, in this curve here. There is money to be made in those smaller markets. And so that comes together here when we talk about diversification. We don't want to sell less to China, Canada, and Mexico. This isn't your retirement portfolio where you don't want to be overweighted. Like, we want to sell more wherever we can. We think there is more business to be done in China, Mexico, and Canada. But what can we do in these other markets to build them up, to give us more customer base there? All right, so that was markets we look at. This is a way to look at it on products. So there's soybeans showing off, you know, on the far left there. They get their own metric, you know, it's too big, they blow everybody else. And then corn, beef and pork, tree nuts. So you can see here's ranked the products we're selling. So in addition to diversifying who we sell to, it's worth thinking about, do we want to diversify what we are selling? And so a couple ways to look at that. One is, do we just want to sell soybeans, or do we also want to sell soybean meal and oil and biodiesel? Or corn? Do we also want to sell DDGs? Do we want to sell ethanol? Do we want to sell corn on the hoof? You know, sell more livestock products? So there's certainly diversification within products, but there's also a possibility to diversify across products. And so, don't want to forget, so we got corn, soybeans, and, apples, pears, and cherries up here. So we got fresh fruit too. That's part, one of our candidates here. And so similar questions about how overweighted are we in a particular market, but also is there other ways to present what we sell? All right, so these are products. Here's another way of looking at concentration. This shows which products have 50% or more of our exports go to one country. So there's sorghum, like, oh my gosh, 90% of our sorghum goes to China. Like 9 out of 10 rows planted to sorghum is destined for China. Very, very exposed. And you can see as you go down the chart there, sort of who is relatively more diversified than others, who is more exposed. Same chart, just sort of flipped around the other way. This shows how many markets you sell to get to 75% of your total exports, right? So there's sorghum, one market, and that's more than 75% of our exports. And then you go all the way across here, poultry, where we're totally diversified, right? Lots and lots of small poultry markets for us. Take our chicken link quarters and our other poultry products. So, you know, these are measures of concentration. They get to this point about the exposure we have to bad events and how diversification should be part of our strategy. But not at the expense of selling less to the big countries. How can we sell more in other places?
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My name is Louis Pugh. I am the Executive Vice President of the Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association.
A highlight from a recent House Transportation Subcommittee hearing on highways and trucking.
Prior to working at OIDA, I was a small business carrier for 23 years, with racking up 2.5 million safe miles of driving. Prior to that, I was a truck driver in the United States Army, and I still hold my CDL today. OIDA is the largest association representing small business truckers and professional drivers. We have 150,000 members across this country that collectively operate 240,000 pieces of equipment, and we have members living in every district of this committee. OIDA's mission is to promote and protect the interest of our members on any issues that impact their safety and success. The highway bill is the Super Bowl during this Congress, and this committee has an opportunity to pass the most pro-trucker highway bill in history. But I want to be clear that pro-trucker and pro-trucking are not always synonymous these days. In fact, many of the policies being touted as good for trucking industry are primarily designed to fatten the wallets and cover the butts of trucking executive corporate shareholders, shippers, brokers, and money-hungry trial lawyers. Most of these proposals prioritize profit over safety by doubling down on many of the problems that have made careers behind the wheel less appealing and sustainable and our roads less safe. Continued acceptance of the widely debunked driver shortage myth has unfortunately convinced many of you that diluting credential standards, resisting enhanced driver training, lowering ages of CDL requirements, and bringing in more cheap foreign drivers is somehow good for trucking. You'll hear a lot today about the need to increase size and weights as something that is good for trucking. Make no mistake, these proposals are losers for truckers and highway safety. I want to especially caution new members of the committee about supporting these controversial increases. One vote to increase today's limits will have every group that wants a special treatment expecting you to support their specific carve-out for the rest of your tenure. Our conversations about what to include in the next highway bill continue after this hearing. Other organizations will propose a dizzying list of unproven and unworkable regulations, and some large carriers will legitimize these proposals with their support, not because they're supposed to commitment to improving safety, but because excessive regulations will drive up costs of their small business competitors. Our goal is to shape federal policy in a manner to make trucking a more attractive and sustainable and safe career for professional drivers. In the end, we're working with bipartisan members of this committee on key policies that will help develop a generation of safe drivers while simultaneously keeping today's experienced drivers behind the wheel. These policies include ending the truck parking crisis, combating freight fraud, guaranteeing broker transparency, ensuring restroom access for truckers at shipping facilities, reducing the perpetual driver turnover rates at large carriers, enhancing entry-level driver training requirements, preventing the counterproductive speed limiter mandate, eliminating predatory lease-to-own schemes, and more.
Louis Pugh, Executive Vice President, Owner Operators Independent Drivers Association. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Let's take a look at the pig crop. Weaning for December 2024 to February 2025 is at 33,701,000 head. A decrease of 0.2% from previous year.
Travis Averill is with USDA's National Ag Statistics Service.
Pigs per litter weaned is at 11.65, up from the rate of 11.53 from last year. So it is a record for this quarter time frame. However, it is down 0.27 from previous quarter that was in the December hogs and pigs report. The chart of the U.S. quarterly pigs per litter from 2016 to current is illustrated at the bottom. So trade expectations compared to NAS estimates as a percent from previous year, the trade ranges are gray, trade averages are the black circles, and NAS estimates are the red squares. For the six items here on the chart, all hogs and pigs, the breeding hogs, market hogs, the pig crop, and second and first intentions for sows fairly are below trade expectations. On the all hogs and pigs chart of ASB first estimate versus final estimates for the last 10 years, ASB first and final estimates are the blue and red line respectively. The trade ranges are illustrated with the light gray. Note 5 of the last 12 quarters, ASB final estimate has been within trade expectations. Here is a table of the U.S. breeding herd inventory for the last 10 years and provides a disposition and utilization. The previous quarter breeding herd was at 6,004,000 head. During the current quarter, hog producers slaughtered 828,000 head while adding back 804,000 head to the breeding herd. Current quarter's breeding herd is at 5,980,000 head, which is down 36,000 from last year. Sow utilization is calculated from the current quarter sows farrowed 2,892,000 head, divided by the previous quarter's breeding herd equates to 48.2%. The Canadian imports by quarter for feeder pigs and slaughter hogs. Canadian feeder pigs and slaughter hogs imported for the first quarter of 2025 accounted for 1,767,000 head compared to 1,678,000 in 2024. This is an increase of 5.3% from 2024. The Canadian quarter import values are above the respective quarters. Feeder pigs as a percentage of the imports are light blue. Of the imports from Canada, 74% are feeder pigs, or 1,303,000 head, up 6.2% compared to prior year's total of 1,227,000 head. Where slaughter hogs, As a percentage of the imports are illustrated with the darker blue, slaughter hogs accounted for 26% of the Canadian imports, or 464,000, up 2.9% from last year's total of 451,000 head. Next, we have the U.S. prices received by farmers for hogs and corn. The chart provides the prices for the last 10 years. The hog prices are blue, the corn prices are in red. The most current prices are for January. February prices will be released next week on March 31st. To the right of the chart are the hogs and corn prices for the last 6 months, along with the ratio. You can see the six-month ratios for this time frame have ranged from 14.24 to 17.66. Out of those months, December and February are the 2 months that are below the historic break-even of 15, just for a point of reference.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Diversification, I've talked a little bit about that. That's what this whole forum is about.
Ryan LeGrand is CEO, U.S. Grains Council.
We heard Ambassador Dowd speak a little bit about how difficult India is. And even though we just opened an office 2 years ago, we've had a consultant there for three decades. We've been there for a long, long time, and nothing moves fast there. We still don't expect anything to move quickly in India, but we've seen President Trump say that he wants a trade deal with them by the end of this year. We would love to see that. They have real opportunities there and needs for products like sorghum. They don't like GM, so GM corn is really tough, and we'd love to get that in. But sorghum is an immediate opportunity. As they produce ethanol there, they've really been successful with their ethanol program. They're up to almost E20. I think it's about an E18 or E19, and they're making it all in India. Well, that's caused a shortage on their grain side, and their poultry feeders and their dairy industry needs that grain that's now being diverted to ethanol. So we see a real opportunity for sorghum, for distiller's grains. And then they don't want to import any fuel ethanol. They're one of our larger industrial ethanol partners, importers, but no fuel. They want to make everything right there in India. That's Modi's slogan, is make in India. Well, they want to make SAF. They want to do clean cooking there in India. And so I think it's key to get our ethanol classified as industrial for those two applications and feed into an A2J alcohol to jet scenario for SAF and feed into their clean cooking market, which just 5%, getting 5% of the market that of the folks that are cooking in their homes with wood fires, with coal, or some cases animal dung. 5% of that market is 200 million gallons. So it's worth going after and one that we're going to be pursuing. Mexico, we've seen in recent periods that Mexico has broken their own record for corn imports. Under phase one in China imported 21 million tons of U.S. corn. Just last year, Mexico imported 23 million tons of U.S. corn, a record and a very, very big success. Now, Mexico was an eligible market under ATP. It is not under the current RAP program. So we see an opportunity to hopefully include that in the future. And then ethanol we see as an opportunity for Mexico, too. They recently passed a biofuels law to start incorporating ethanol into their fuel matrix, and we hope to be a part of that supply. RAP is the current program, and I think, ATP was such a success that this regional agricultural promotion program was rolled out. And it sets us up for a global trade reset under President Trump that we're seeing right now and continued market diversification. It's going to further accelerate our ethanol programming and promotion. RAP 2, there's been two rounds. We're very happy to see that the EU was included in the second round. It was not in the first round, and it is in the second round. Countries that are still excluded include China, Canada, and Mexico. And like I said at the bottom there, we'd like to see Mexico and Canada included in that going forward. Here's just a quick look of the impact. The numbers are right there. Ag exports count has projected these numbers here. I can't read them from the screen. But the main takeaway here is that 1 to 24 return on investment. That's what they say that through studies have said that MAP and FMD dollars, it's a 1 to 24 return on investment. So I can think of no better investment by the USDA to continue this FMD and MAP program and even increase it as we go forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Slightly lower adjustments to U.S. hog and pig inventories year over year, as well as from the previous quarter. With the details from the March quarterly hogs and pigs report, USDA livestock analyst Michael McConnell.
USDA estimated that there was 74.5 million hogs as of March 1st throughout the United States. That's slightly lower, but relatively unchanged from where it was last year.
Regarding the breakdown of breeding and marketing hog inventories,
the breeding herd declined by 1% compared to a year ago. Overall, the breeding herd has been relatively stable the past couple of years, with much of the growth in the pig crop coming from the increased pigs per litter rate.
That rate lower than the previous two quarters.
So overall, that'll have potential to produce fewer market hogs and potentially tighten up hog supplies a little bit.
Sow farrowings were also recorded lower from the previous year, down 1% at 2.89 million head for the winter quarter. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.